Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. This is our second hour of the show, and that's our listening hour. But we're going to talk a little bit more about the iPhone 8 and 10 Cal. We have Gary Baker in Fort Lauderdale, and he says most of the evacuees are starting to slowly trickle in. And I was teasing him during the commercial break about how good his audio sounds now. And we're thinking it's all the damn tourists. There are no tourists down there right now. And that's why the phone quality is so much better. But
you know, who knows? It could be that reason. Although I will tell you that the hotel next door is starting to fill up again, and thing other than the great big piles of sand all along the roadway that they're trying to remove, and hopefully they put it back on the beach. But you know, it's starting. You know, starting to get back to normal here. Well, we didn't take that direct hit. We had some tornadoes. One tornado hit was just about a mile north of us. And then another tornado was, I'm sorry, about a mile south of us. And then another tornado was about 3 miles north of us coming off the lake, or coming off, excuse me, the ocean. It's a big lake, big lake.
It's a pond, yeah.
Yeah, at least we didn't take the direct hits of those tornadoes. So,
well, Gary,
all's good.
Gary, you have a dinghy that goes along with your boat. Is that correct?
Yes.
Well, you know,
we were contemplating taking that out today. Actually,
you could probably pick up a few extra dollars by hauling sand out and dumping it back in the ocean with that.
You know, there's a bunch of sand in the dinghy, and it's covered. Hard to believe. I got a cover on the dinghy that is on what's called davits that I used to pull it out of the water on the back of the boat. And, you know, so it was up pretty high and completely covered. And there's still sand. There's sand everywhere.
Okay. So we're going to take our listener calls after this at 800-859-0957. If you have a computer question, we'd love to talk to you about it. I have a few listener questions that I might be reading off. But, Cal, okay, iPhone 8, iPhone 10, what's going on?
It's just another case of wonderful nirvana. No, I'm just kidding. iPhone 8, let's talk about that one first.
So how big is it?
iPhone 8 is just as big as iPhone 7. It comes in the 8. And it comes in 8 Plus size. So you have the two different sizes,
okay,
which are identical to the iPhone 7. The difference, one of the biggest differences on the 8 is that you have different cameras on the back of the Plus version. It's a dual camera system back there. So you get two of them, so it gets a better focus and stuff like that.
And you can get stereographic photos, I would imagine?
Not yet. But they're working toward it. The editing capabilities for your photos on the new iPhone 8 and also on the 10, is that you can change the lighting as if you were in a studio shooting a shot. So if you wanted to do like studio lighting and make everything in the background completely dark and just have the focus on the portrait shot that you just did, that's one of the other things.
So better editing on the phone itself.
Better the ability to shoot portraits on the phone, mm-hmm, as opposed to shooting them in landscape and getting them just quite right. It's just wonderful.
iPhones do take wonderful pictures.
They really, really do.
Now, help me. Did they get rid of that button? I heard someone say, the button, where's the button? Or was that Willy Wonka? But didn't they?
It depends on which phone you're talking about.
Oh.
If you're talking about the iPhone 8, it still has the little home button on it that you touch. It can read your fingerprint and unlock with it and open up the phone. But if you're talking about the iPhone 10, there's no button.
That's going to be so disorienting, removing all of these. So there's just basically a power button. Do they have the volume buttons too?
You have power and volume on both sides of the phone.
Okay.
But when you go to unlock the phone, you pick up the phone and you hold it up to your face. And when you do that, it reads your face and unlocks the phone.
Okay.
Now, unlike with the Android phones, that they had a face recognition program on it as well, but that program was just looking at it from a one-dimensional sort of aspect. So literally, you could take an Android phone and hold your photograph up to it. It would look at it and in some cases unlock, where with the iPhone, it's looking at not only just your face, but the contours and the shape of your face.
That's why you need the two cameras. Yeah,
yeah, so it gives you more three-dimensional look. Go ahead, Gary.
You know, Cal, I'm a little worried, though, because they also have an infrared camera that will help it to augmented reality. And I'm a little concerned that when I hold it up to my face, it doesn't, like, all of a sudden start thinking for itself and shriek in horror. Oh, my God, he doesn't have his hair combed. Oh, you know, comb that hair. Do this. Did you wash your face this morning? You know,
Where's your sunscreen?
That we don't get to that place.
But, it looks at the structure of your face, because literally not only can you have your hair all mussed up or forget to wash it or whatever, that sort of thing, if you have a hat on, if you have glasses on, it can tell your face under all that sort of stuff. If you're a woman and you change your hairstyle dramatically, it still can read your face and tell it.
Okay, so maybe I'll go back to this later and I talk about the security features of this. But so what's the gigabytes available on the iPhone 8 and 10? Is it 64, 128?
They come in 128 and 256.
Wow, that's more than my home computer.
Yeah. Yeah, so you get lots of space to be able to store lots of things on the phone. But like every other technology I've ever owned in my life, I always say, oh, I'll never fill this space up. And guess what?
We
fill it up really quick.
Okay. But so we're going to be taking a quick break on the Internet Advisor.
And when we come back, we're going to take your calls. So call in at 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0WJR. And we'll be back after this message. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. My name is Cal Carson, and I'm here with Ed Rudell in studio. And on the phone, we have the ever popular and lovely Gary Baker coming to us live and direct from Florida. And we're here to answer your questions. If you have any questions about the Internet, about technology, we're here to answer those questions for you. And you can ask those questions quite simply by calling into our toll-free number. It's 1-800-859-0957. That's 1-800-859-0WJR. And Ed, I believe you've got one of our listeners that have emailed you a question, and let's tell us about it.
Well, yep. I had Larry that wrote me a question while we were preempted last month, and he had an interesting one, and he provided a lot of details. But basically, he said, I have Picasa Photoshop problem, and about 3 years ago, your text helped me learn how to overcome problems I had transitioning to my new PC. Let's see. My new PC is designed so that I can download photos from my Canon digital camera using Picasa. No problem there. But I need to save as images and move them to Photoshop for if I want to do any type of further editing. How can I... somehow I cannot get that to work. Can you guys help? So basically what I was describing to him in the answers is more than likely what Larry was doing was he's used to identifying the file in his, like, My Photos or wherever they're on his computer, and he's probably used to double-clicking on them, like most users are. And what's happened is you have, when you have multiple photo editors on your computer, Picasa and then Photoshop, when you're only one of those can be the primary program that's associated with when you double-click, what program do you want to open up? Do you want to open Picasa or do you want to open up Photoshop? So when he installed his other program for his camera, what happened was is that the Picasa became the default program for opening up graphic programs. What I simply told him to do is either he could change his preferences by right mouse clicking on his photograph and select open with and select the appropriate program like Photoshop and make that the new default. Or he can just open up the program Photoshop and then do file open. Am I confusing you? Because remember, what we're dealing with is double click, and only one program can be double. When you double click on a file, only one program can be identified as the default. But you can always open up another program. You know, if you want to use Microsoft Paint, or if you want to use Picasa or Photoshop, and you can always do file open and open up that file, that graphic file.
Once you set that as your default on that particular file, is that for just that particular file, or does that make it for all other files just like that anytime you click on it?
Well, it's just for that file type. So if it's a JPEG, JPG, then anytime he double clicks on a JPEG file, it's going to open up the default program. You know, if he's open up, if he has a more advanced camera and he's opening up a RAW RAW photograph file, he can make it so I always want to use Photoshop when I'm opening up a RAW image. You know, so the preference is basically he said, thank you very much. You got me on the right track. It's just up to me to modify my personal work habits so that, I've provided him alternate ways of accessing, you know, his photos and editing them.
And not only is that true for his photos, but that's true for any file that he's going to use on his computer. If it was a document file, like a text file, and he normally used something like Microsoft Word, and let's say he doesn't have Word on his computer and he's using OpenOffice, he can right mouse click on it and say open with, and then point to OpenOffice, and then subsequent files would do it with OpenOffice. Is that correct?
Right. Oh, exactly.
Okay. That sounds great. Hey, listen, we've got some callers calling in right now, so let's see if we can take some of those calls. Let's start off with Jim from Westland. Jim, thank you for calling to the Internet Advisor. What's your question for today?
Okay. I have a new iPad Pro, which I've had for about a month. The resolution is good on it. The stereo sound is good. I like a lot of things. But, for example, in Skype, on the iPad Pro, unless I'm guessing with the new program, they're going to have an upgrade on the operating program. You can't even share screen on Skype like I can on my other computers that are Apple.
In other words, within Skype, you want to be able to share the screen with the person that's on the other end receiving
information. Yeah, I want to share the screen on my computer. I'll say, I have trouble with this. You want me to tell me what to do and what you see that I'm doing that way? That's why I want to have share screen.
Oh, yeah, share or present. So now, does that feature, are you asking if that feature exists on the iPad?
It doesn't exist. I'm telling you, it doesn't.
It doesn't exist.
I called the Apple twice already on that issue, and currently it's not available. I'm presuming maybe if they put a new operating system on, maybe it'll have more capability. I don't know if I'm shooting in the dark on that one.
Well, you're kind of shooting in the dark just a little bit, and I'll tell you why. Skype is a program that's written and owned by Microsoft. And
right,
Apple,
but it works on my other, I bought an Apple computer 2 years ago, a desktop that is superb resolution. And that one works on the Apple, and it shares screen just like it does on my wife's PC. It doesn't stop it from sharing screen.
Well, but what you're talking about is two different PCs, right, Cal?
Well, he's talking about
two. No, I'm talking about one PC and one Apple.
You're talking about two different operating systems, and let me try.
Yeah, but they both share screen, the PC and the Apple. They're both sharing it.
You got a Microsoft PC, and then you have an Apple PC, but the iPad is a tablet.
No, it's not an Apple PC. It's just a Microsoft PC. It's not an Apple PC.
Okay, let's stop.
On both the Apple and my and PC, I can share screen with Skype.
Correct.
When I put on my iPad Pro, I cannot.
That is correct. Now, here's what the difference is. Your iPad Pro is running a different operating system than your PC or your Mac.
I know.
Okay, and until Microsoft, who owns Skype, writes a program to enable that feature, you won't be able to do it.
Well, they're coming out with a new system in 2 weeks. How do we know that new system is going to not open up that feature?
Well, I would.
That's Apple is going to release.
Apple's going to release a new operating system.
Right. But I'll give you an example. I upgraded my desktop Apple computer to Aries operating system, and all of a sudden I got a voice dictation program. I like to try to attempt to write books. And it was better than Dragon Speaking, which came with Aries.
Right, but these are all individual programs.
Yeah. So I think what we're struggling with here is, and Cal said it, and I'm not sure that it was completely understood. You have an operating system that runs an Apple computer and an operating system that runs a PC. What you have on your iPad is an app. And the app is only as good as the app provider. The app provider is Microsoft. So when Microsoft creates an app for the iPad that includes the ability to share the screen, then you will be able to download that app and use it.
Well,
but they have not created that app yet.
Yeah, completely independent of what Apple is releases. It is basically
right.
Microsoft has not created an app for the iPad Pro.
That allows it.
that allows it. It's an Apple thing. But there might be alternate programs that do that.
Matter of fact, I would suggest that you take a look at a program called Team Viewer.
Okay, there I've got Team Viewer on. Okay, let me give it to you real short because there's other callers beside me.
Okay, go.
Team Viewer will not let me share on anybody else's computer but my other computer in the house. I can share Team Viewer with the PC. A friend of mine who's very much more knowledgeable than I am, he can't address my Apple. Once I put Team Viewer on the Apple iPad Pro, he can't address my computer. It will not function that way.
Okay. Well, I'm going to suggest this because we're going to a break right now. In 2 weeks, take a peek at Microsoft.com and look at Skype and see if those features have been added to that particular program, and perhaps you'll have that function. If not, send an email to Microsoft and ask them when that function will be available. We're going to take a quick break and be back in a few minutes here and the Internet Advisor.
Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. I'm Ed Riddell with Cal Carson and Gary Baker. And you wanted to ask, you were supposed to be in Florida this week, weren't you, Cal?
Yeah, actually, I was supposed to be in Tampa this weekend as well, doing a skating competition down there. So this evening, I would be sitting somewhere having a nice Cuban, drinking a mojito, and enjoying a good Cuban sandwich, but I'm not going to be able to do it because Gary decided he wanted to have a hurricane.
Yeah, well, you know, I hear the mosquitoes are starting to get bad down there, so, and they're really concerned about
that. You know, I haven't seen them at all.
I was going to ask you.
I have not seen them at all.
You'd see them if you moved the sand out the way.
Yeah, maybe that's true. But I will tell you, there are not bugs like I thought there would be down here.
Well, you know, you are on the ocean, and you do get a breeze, which would then typically blow them inshore. But I'm sure what they're concerned about is inland more with all that water and the Okie-Pinokie Swamp and stuff like that. And
you know, I always wonder how the gators fared in the swamp during a hurricane. Did they get, like, moved around a
they
lot
have,
or what?
They have swimming pools they can hide in.
Ah, that's great. Well, with that in mind, I'm going to give out the number again. And that's 1-800-859-0957 if you want to call in and ask a question. In the meantime, let's go to line two. We've got Joe from Detroit. Joseph, what's going on?
Hi, guys. How you doing today?
We're doing great. What gets you to call in on a day like this?
Well, I have a real primitive question. Do I have to pay somebody a monthly fee, or can I buy a modem and just hook it up in my phone line to access the Internet?
In order to get on the Internet, you always have to be able to go through what they call an ISP, or an Internet Service Provider. That could be your cable TV service. That could be your telephone service through AT&T over a telephone line. But yes, unfortunately, you have to pay somebody something.
Well, I mean, unless they have dial-up. Gary talked about that, I think, a little while ago, but it's so slow that it would take you... Dial-up would take you over traditional landlines. You would take you 30 minutes to receive the advertisements.
Because the fastest you could go on the landlines is 56K, which is pretty darn slow. But yes, you got to pay somebody a monthly fee in order to get onto the Internet.
Right. Or, you know, cell providers. So if you have your cellular provider, you can work with them to get a and tether your phone to your home computers or laptop, and they're called Wi-Fi hotspots. But there's a limitation on how much data you can actually pull down.
Yeah.
You know, I just thought about something. I was wrong. You don't have to pay someone a monthly fee. If you have a laptop computer and you can go anywhere there's a Wi-Fi hotspot, you can get onto the Internet. Now,
is that dangerous, though?
Well, dangerous is a... is a relative question. And it's dangerous in the sense that if you go to a Wi-Fi hotspot and you're going to get on the Internet and conduct business like banking or something that contains any of your personal identification information, in that particular case, yes, that would be, I would say, dangerous and challenging, and I wouldn't do it. So
if I was, if I wasn't doing that kind of stuff, would somebody still be able to access my sensitive information once I open that access to Wi-Fi? Are they still able to go in there and do whatever they want?
Well, as long as your computer is patched and you don't have a Trojan on there, right? Like someone emailed you a Trojan, and then you're usually pretty secure. But what you're talking about is man in the middle. So say you go to some place that offers free Wi-Fi, and say it happens to be McDonald's or Starbucks. If you had some guy in a parking lot, some notorious person with a trench coat in a white van, and you know stuff like that, and they also created another hotspot that had the exact same name. Mistakenly, people would connect to it. So anything that you transmitted out of your computer, they could theoretically monitor and capture that information. Now, but they would have no means of getting into your computer unless they had a vulnerability, you know, like, oh, they knew about this hack, and or your computer doesn't have all the Microsoft security updates or all the Apple security updates. So the thing
what happened to Equifax then?
Equifax, their servers were attacked by a vulnerability that was
in the operating system. Beg your pardon?
Yeah, they knew about this.
Go ahead, Gary.
Yeah, so the Equifax, they knew about this vulnerability in March. They patched some servers, didn't patch the servers that serve this website using Apache Strut and the Struts, and they just didn't patch it. And they have now figured out that sometime in May was the first time that somebody had breached that server. And so they've gone back now from May until, I think it was May 7th was the first time. But sometime in May through July 30th, they found a lot of times the same people had gone back and forth onto that server.
Yep.
And so what Ed and Cal were saying was that your computer, as long as you keep it patched, as long as you have antivirus, what they call endpoint protection, but antivirus, and you use a good malware program, we recommend Malwarebytes because of just the free version, or you can pay for it, it's not very much. But if you do all of that, and you're careful, as Cal suggested, when you go to a McDonald's or Panera or any place where there's a hotspot, you can conduct business online. You know, but you got to be really careful.
I'm sorry, I'm taking up all your time, but can you tell me, is Norton a good internet security package?
Oh yeah,
yes,
it's better than nothing at all for sure, and yes, it is a good product. It's been around for a while, and it's been protecting a lot of people. For example, my ISP, which is Comcast, they provide internet to me for free because they want to protect me, so they protect their own network.
No, they provide Norton to you for free.
Yes.
Yes. And other internet providers provide McAfee. That's also very good. If you have a modern version of Windows, that it'll either come with Windows Security Essentials or Windows Defender. If it's Windows 10. That's also an excellent antivirus and protection.
I've read that Norton and LifeLock have become one company. Is that correct?
I don't know that for a fact. I'd have to check.
No, I didn't. I haven't heard that. I'm sure they're partnered together in some fashion. That wouldn't surprise me.
I think LifeLock partners with everybody. Yeah.
Well, I think one of them bought the other one, but I don't know. Remember which way it went.
Well, you ask a good question. I mean, I wish I could get free internet service. One of the things I do is I also, I've loaded Opera, which is an alternate web browser, on one of my computers at home, and I have for like 6 months. And then there's a setting in there that basically says, always enable VPN or secured connection. So anything that passes through my computer, it goes through a server in England or goes through a server in Canada or in America, or I could say South America. And so all my connections are secured between me and these other servers. So it's a free version of VPN that I use. Now, that offers me an additional layer of protection, where I can use, or you could pay for a personal VPN, which is not very expensive. You can do, I think it's like, you know, $4 a month, and you could pay someone and they could provide you VPN for free. But then again, you need internet access in order to establish that connection.
One last thing, Joseph, before I let you go. I'm going to turn the speaker down a little bit. Listen, let me ask you a question. Is it that you can't afford it, or are you just that cheap?
I'm a little cheap. I'm, you know, I can afford it, I guess.
Okay, so what? So what you should do, in my opinion, and I'm cheap too. Don't get me wrong. Check around with all the
paper stuff. I don't have to, you know.
Yeah, check with all the internet providers and find the least expensive one that they have, and buy the lowest rate that they have. And see if that'll work for you. If that works out for you, you'll be do just great, okay?
All righty, sir.
I'm going to let you go. You have a great day. We'll talk to you later.
Right. You know, he brings up a good point. I mean, so he's not even the point of wanting to cut the cord, you know, for paying the cable bills. He hasn't got a cord to cut.
Yeah. He wants to do it as cheap as possible over the air with air.
So, you know, remember the point? There was a point when Royal Oak was providing free internet service down Lincoln Street in downtown Royal Oak. And some communities still do that, but it's, you know, but I thought that whole thing, I think they retired that a few years ago.
Yeah, and it wasn't the fastest internet service either. Hey, listen, we're going to get back with more calls. We got Joe from Livonia hanging on. We'll get to you shortly. And you can call in, too, at 1-800-859-0957. We'll be back with more here on the Internet Advisor. Welcome back to the Internet Advisor. There's still some time to call in if you want to with your calls and your questions. That's at 1-800-859-0957, 1-800-859-0WJR. And the other thing that I wanted to talk about real quick, Ed, is that tomorrow on September 17th at the Birmingham Temple in Southfield, we'll have our monthly Mac group meeting, and everyone's welcome to come out. You don't necessarily have to have a Mac. You could have a Windows machine. And we're going to have Bob Levitas, and he's an author of more than 75 computer-related books. Many of them are the For Dummies type books. So if you want to know stuff about For Dummies for Macintosh, for the iPhone and iPad, you want to come out to our meeting tomorrow at 3 o'clock. And you can find out more information about that at macgroup.org.
And for our previous listener that was trying to figure out why he wanted to pay for internet service, let me just say I've saved so much money watching YouTube videos on how to fix my broken down cars.
Oh my God, tell me about that. They are the most informative and easy and clearly displayed ways to learn how to do things.
Now, if not learn, but it's like, you know, I'll put this, I'll shout out to the ether and Google or YouTube, and I'll say my Sebring will not come out of park, it's stuck. And then I got these guys there. It says, oh, you got a broken spring in your gear shifter, and if you replace it with a cotter pin after drilling a hole through it, you should be good to go. All you have to do is do this. And they showed me. And I had that car running in an hour, and I'm so glad.
I mean, how much did it cost you?
It cost me an hour and a half and saved me over $600.
Yeah. And just think, even if you had to pay $20 a month for internet service, it'd still be worth it, right?
Oh, my gosh, yes.
It's just great. Hey, listen, let's go back to the phones, and let's go to talk to Joe from Livonia. Hey, Joe, how you doing today?
I'm awake.
That's good to hear. What's going on, Joe?
Well, first of all, good evening to you guys. Number two, suggestions. To the previous caller, some of the ISPs will actually allow you a 30-day trial window. Verizon / Infinity doesn't operate ISPs in Livonia-like, but it does in other areas around Detroit. So that might be a hindrance for him.
So they give him 30 days of free internet service to try out before they actually have to sign up, huh?
Some.
Yeah, some. So it's like
I'm finding it very limited, but they're there.
So shop around and see if you can find out anything, and if you're lucky, you might be able to find it, correct?
Yep.
What's the other thing you have for us?
Okay, the other one's with the hack on the Experian thing. I went, first of all, it's clark.com, and it will take you to a various number of articles. One of them includes what the fees are if you want to freeze your account. And Michigan, in some cases, does not provide some of the services that other states do. If you're under 16, there's not a fee involved. But if you are, that's $10 to freeze. And there's $10 for, where the heck are we at?
$10 to freeze and $10 to unfreeze it when you need to use it.
Well, it's a permanent removal. It's not a, the Michigan doesn't offer a temporary on block.
Okay. So, once again, Jill's pointed out a very good point. And there's a lot of detail on this Clark website, so you want to read it fully before you do anything. But there's a lot of information how things can vary from state to state. So this is people in Michigan, people in Ohio, Indiana, or any state that we reach within the sound of our voice. You want to check out all the information about it. You can check it at Clark.com. You can check it with your state's attorney general. You can check it with the Consumer Protection Bureau and find out all the information regarding how you can handle your credit and protect it in your particular geographical location. Once you get the right information, you'll be able to take care of that situation and protect yourself. Hey, Joe, thanks for calling in and giving us that information.
One other item, and that is with the Secretary of State, if you call in Michigan, your wait may be extended.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Joe. You take care, and thanks a lot for calling in.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
So, Cal, I wanted to talk about this. We only have a few minutes left in the show. Do we have another caller?
Yes, we do.
Oh,
let's go jump on them real fast.
I'd
come
rather
back.
Help with the dog callers.
Okay, yeah. Steve from Lathrop Village, you're on with the Internet Advisor. What's going on?
Hi, I have a 20-year-old LaserJet printer, HP 6P. Very nice machine, never overrun. But I think my operating system upgraded and deleted the drivers to use it. I wondered if there was some way I could use the internet to keep it in function.
Well, you should. I mean, I had an HP LaserJet 6P. I loved it, but I had to stop using it because the things that I was printing, and it wasn't much, were basically overwhelming it because the memory was so limited.
Does that 6P have a USB
connection? Yeah, my son
connection?
Told me the same thing. You've had trouble with it before. Just get a new one is what his suggestion was.
Right. Well, the content that we're... Yeah, basically the content we're printing, either from a website or even a Microsoft Word document, as an example, when you print to it, it looks like it's only a few words on text, but there's so much information in there that's in the background, it's overwhelming the printer. But specifically what you're asking is do they offer drivers? Is it Windows 10 you were upgraded to, or was it a Mac operating system?
No, it's Windows 10, but I can't get it to print anymore. I used to be able to select the machine to print, but now it won't even access the option to print.
Okay, how do you have the have the printer hooked up? Is it using a USB cable?
I think so, sure.
Okay, so here's what I'm going to suggest that you do. Go to HP.com and put in that printer model, and you can go to their drivers section. The chances are pretty good what's going to happen is that you won't have a driver specific for the 6P, but it'll bring up the HP Universal Print driver. Download that print driver to your machine and try that. If it does not print, then I have to tell you, unfortunately, that machine has come to the end of the road, and it's time for you to go out and get a different one.
Well, the other thing...
Yeah, sure. My printer is 20 years old. You're right.
Yeah, well, the other thing that he may try is what you neglected to say, and this is the first thing. You might want to go, since it was updated, you may want to go into your printers and devices, and in Windows 10, it's not the easiest place to find. But if you hit your start button or your Cortana and just type in devices and printers in the Cortana, it'll bring it up. Delete your existing printer definitions in there. Remove them. Highlight them and select remove device.
For the 6P.
For the 6P. Remove the, and then have it unplugged when you're doing that. Have the USB port or the parallel port.
Yeah, that's the first thing they told me to do.
And then, then plug it back in and see if the Windows 10 will automatically discover that device now that you've removed it all. How many, is that the only device you have defined in there? Just out of curiosity.
I think so. Yeah. I'm not sure what you're saying, but yeah.
Well, it's
my only printer. It's not a...
Well, what you do is you hit your start button or the katana with Windows 10 on the bottom of the screen. Type in device and printers, devices and printers, and that'll bring up a utility within Windows 10 that allows you to view your devices and printers. Remove your printer, plug your printer, you know, remove the definition for your printer in Windows 10, and then reboot the computer, plug everything back in, and then hopefully Windows will rediscover that printer device. If not, we might be where Cal's saying and is to purchase another one. But we're at the end of the show. Thank you for that excellent question.
I think that's about it. I mean, Gary, thanks a lot for being with us. Hopefully you'll be back again the next time we're on. And everybody that's out there listening, please stay tuned to WJR for more programming today. But check on our schedules on a regular basis. And when we're not having MSU football here, you'll hear us in this spot. Every Saturday from 5 to 7 p.m. Once again, thanks a lot to Tom Baker, our engineer, doing a great job back there answering the phones. And you have a great day. We'll see you the next time here on the Internet Advisor.